Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Dr. John Tyler is the HBU Professor of Law and Jurisprudence, as well as Director of the Legal Studies Program. He's practiced attorney in Texas for 35 years, even arguing as lead counsel in two cases before the United States Supreme Court. He earned his PhD in philosophy from Texas A&M. And you probably remember him from the Pillars magazine, where Dr. Tyler has written before. Just incredible pieces. Well, there is a signature piece that every single person must read, and it's called The War on Religious Liberty, and where Dr. Tyler has laid out the entire case. This is a classic. I mean, we have been circulating this all over HBU already, and everyone is saying magnificent. And with the upcoming Morris Family Center for Law and Liberty, it has all a tremendous pertinence, because this building that's going to be erected on the 152-acre campus of HBU is going to be very reminiscent, almost like a replica of Independence Hall, just bigger, and added classrooms. Imagine Dr. Tyler will be teaching along with his colleagues inside this facility, teaching about religious liberty. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, in this article, you talk a lot about the war on religious liberty, but then the background is just fascinating to me. And it, you know, the minute we got this, I knew it would be what it was. I mean, this is it reminds me of like a thesis. So powerful. But you talk about what Christians can do, why believers need to be informed. And I'd like for us to take a few minutes to just talk about that.
Sure. The battle in this war on religious liberty, the battles are being fought in the courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Everyday people are now being involved. So your viewers may be very familiar with the Masterpiece Cake Shop,
yes,
or Bake Shop case, the Masterpiece Cake Shop case.
Right.
And I'll just give you an idea about how relentless the progressives are in attacking people. The gentleman, Mr. Phillips, politely declined to make a cake for a gay wedding based on his religious grounds. He was prosecuted for that. The case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and he was accused in Colorado by the Civil Rights Commission of being a Nazi, of engaging in a Holocaust, and these sorts of things like that. And the Supreme Court sent the case back down, overturned his conviction, and said you can't go after people and be that abusive to them with regard to their religious liberty. Well, the same day that decision came out, a lawyer in Colorado called, you know, to set up another case, called Mr. Phillips and said, I want you to make a cake that will be blue on the outside but red on the inside, because I wanted to celebrate my transition from identifying as a male to mm-hmm. female. And Mr. Phillips, of course, knew what was, you know, that it was a setup, but he went ahead and declined to based on his religious grounds. So the man then instigated another civil rights complaint, and they started going again after Mr. Phillips. And finally, Mr. Phillips countersued, and when he countersued, they dropped the claim.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Colorado State government. But as soon as that claim was dropped, then that attorney filed another suit seeking civil liability against him. So it's just relentless and relentless, relentless. The courage that it takes, he's not a wealthy man. He's just a guy that makes his living baking cakes.
Sure.
There's another case that I talk about, a lady that has a flower shop that has undergone similar repeated attacks over and over again. So these attacks are going to come at us, but what happens if you have, if the progressives pick on a small person thinking they won't be able to defend themselves and can get a case decision that rules their way, then that case opinion gets used all over the country against other individuals.
Sure.
So one of the things that we have to do as Christians or as anyone who loves religious liberty, and my love for religious liberty extends to Muslims, to Hindus, to Buddhists, everyone,
sure, right.
Okay, that you have to stand up for this now. But the thing I want to say that's encouraging about it is that we have now on the pro-liberty side have had a really unprecedented string of victories that has happened. We lost most of the cases in the 60s, but we've won most of the cases since then, and there's a renewed respect in the courts for religious liberty and for people who want to have the free exercise of their religious beliefs. The other thing is, if you're attacked individually, I'd like to go ahead and mention that there are three wonderful groups of really excellent attorneys: the Alliance Defending Freedom out of Scottsdale, Arizona, the Beckett Group that defended HBU in our case when we were attacked, and then a group out of Dallas called First Liberty. These are all excellent, excellent attorneys. They specialize in religious liberty, and they do all of their work at no charge to the person who advocates religious liberty.
You know, it's you think that this could never happen to you, but it can happen. And you can, when you look at your article, you just see the historical background of mm-hmm. religious liberty. It was a bedrock of this country.
Oh, absolutely.
The early fathers of our country would have never dreamed of this kind of judicial tyranny reversal.
No, they never would. And in the article, one of the things that I do are three great writers on why we should have religious liberty, or John Locke from England, mm-hmm. published his work in 1689. And then we have James Madison, who wrote a famous work, a piece advocating no state support of religion in Virginia. And he argues that once you give the state the power to choose a denomination, if they have the power to control your religious liberty, they have the power to control all your other liberties as well. And he's exactly right with that. And then Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson has some beautiful language as only he can do, but his argument is that God makes our minds free and that truth will always prevail. Truth doesn't need state establishment of religion or state support of religion. Truth will always prevail as long as we are free to pursue it and as long as we are free to debate it. And religious liberty gives us the freedom to pursue this. The other thing that's really important that I think is not really, I've been very fortunate to have an extensive background in law and also in philosophy, and a lot of important ideas fall kind of in the gap between the two. But one of the things, when I teach constitutional law my first semester here, I teach the architecture of the Constitution, and experiences that we've had in history, starting with Sparta in 700 BC, of which our founders were aware, and our founders had an eye to these historical events, mm-hmm. and drafted the architecture of our Constitution to prevent these things from happening here. One of the last principle, I have nine principles that we go through. The last one is something called political virtue that is talked about at length by the founders. What that's a patriotism, a selfless devotion to your country, to your family, to God, to your fellow men in your community. And if you have a representative republic like we have in the United States, it cannot function unless you have a politically virtuous people.
Mm-hmm.
And history shows us that there's never been a politically virtuous people in any civilization in the West that didn't also have the freedom to pursue their religious beliefs because, and I think it's in human nature, we have an infinite ability to rationalize away our wrongful conduct. And our nature as human beings is such that we've got to have some kind of transcendent moral order as a source of principles that we can follow in order to govern ourselves. And if we don't govern ourselves, we can't govern others either. And there's a great quote from the English historian Lord Acton about the fall of the Roman Republic. He said, "Rome never fell mm-hmm. to an enemy because there was no enemy they could not conquer. They fell from their own vices." And so we have
Gibbon to said the same thing in the fall and
exactly,
the Roman
exactly,
Empire.
That's exactly right. It was an internal mm-hmm. failure that happened. So if we look at history, all the great cultures always had a source of moral guidance that was from a transcendent order. And it goes all through society. The first big one is Plato's theory of forms. Mm-hmm. Aristotle had his doctrine of natural law. Cicero was a Stoic in Rome. They had a view of all of nature was a rational guiding and gave us moral decrees. Christianity comes onto the scene roughly 2,000 years ago. It also has this moral code. And what we find is if you have this transcendent moral code, it allows us to overcome the shortcomings of our nature and be the type of people that is required for a representative republic. Montesquieu, the French philosopher, wrote a book in 1748 called The Spirit of the Laws that perhaps was the second most influential book in our Constitution drafting. The founders were all very aware of him. And he talks at length about political virtue and the necessity of it. And one of the things that he talks about that I think is so beautifully insightful, he says, if you look at history, history is filled with despotism and tyranny and dictators. And the reason is those are easy to establish because they thrive on fear in human beings. All you have to do to hold power is to instill fear in people. Fear is a universal emotion that we're all subject to. He said, however, that representative republics like we establish are incredibly rare. He says it takes a miracle of legislation to establish a power that can govern, but also a power that can limit itself. But he says you cannot establish it and you cannot maintain it unless you have a politically virtuous people. And that always requires religious liberty in order to have that.
You know, and it's amazing. I've been to many nations where there is no religious freedom. When we were in Beijing, I'll never forget, we were meeting with believers there. But they cautioned us before they dropped us off at the hotel that our rooms would be monitored.
Sure.
And, I mean, they literally said, do not talk in your room. A friend of mine has an international school in China. They have monitors in every classroom, and if the faculty says anything about Jesus Christ, the school's fined $15,000 to $30,000. We're not talking about examples. I mean, this potentially could happen in the United States of America if we lose our religious liberty.
Yes, by definition. And the example, you know, I make the claim in there that religious liberty and our other liberties are tied together and they rise and fall together. And the greatest example of that is James II in England, right before, basically he's king from 1685 to 1688. England was a Protestant country and they had laws established in Protestantism. England never had religious liberty. That's the great gift of the American Constitution. But it was illegal to be an officer in the military, to be an educator, to hold a position in government if you're a Roman Catholic. Well, James II comes to the throne by inheritance, and he's Roman Catholic. So what he tries to do is to force England back to Roman Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And in a three-year period of time, these are the things that he does. He fraudulently packs ballot boxes. He targets political opponents and has them judicially murdered by packing the juries against them and having corrupt judges. He illegally raises a private army under his command that was illegal of about 70,000 people, and then used them to illegally disarm the English people one night in November. He did all of these things in order to try to take away, to force his view of religion onto the people there. And of course, the story is the Glorious Revolution resulted from that, and then we got the English Bill of Rights, from which 43, no fewer than 43 provisions of our own Constitution come from that English Bill of Rights. So these rights were established, including religious liberty, for Protestants up to a point. John Locke comes in, writes a book called A Letter Concerning Religious Toleration, and England passes an act in 1701 called the Toleration Act, and that greatly influences our First Amendment. But our First Amendment is the first time in human history that religious liberty is given to everyone. And you have an unlimited, or jurisprudence says you have an unlimited right to believe whatever you want to do.